Now let's consider some aspects of how the classical economists thought about India and the British colonization of India. Keep in mind that the British government itself does not start ruling India until the 1850s, so we're talking about various phases of rule by the East India Company. The East India Company was granted a monopoly over the Indian trade in the early 1600s, and in about the middle of the 18th century, the East India Company actually itself starts to exercise rule over parts of India. For much more on these developments, see our video on the East India Company in our class on India, and in general, see the videos on the colonial history of India in that same class. One early treatment of India from economists comes from Thomas Munn, who was basically a mercantilist, and Munn is writing in 1621, and he and many of the other mercantilists, they saw the India trade as a way of getting a favorable balance of trade and indeed specie inflow into England. So their basic recipe was to force India to accept the exports of England, most of all cloth, and at the same time keep England somewhat closed to goods coming from India, and the goal here would be to bring in more specie into England and also to boost English exports. Various versions of this idea were in fact applied over the course of several centuries. As mercantilism evolved into classical economics, economic writers began to turn their attention to the question of why the Indian economy wasn't doing better. These numbers are not very exact, but you can see, starting in 1600 and terminating in 1871, the course of Indian per capita income overall is on a downward slope. In other words, in many regards, the standard of living in India appeared to be falling. So the question was, why was this the case? Adam Smith, writing his Wealth of Nations in 1776, does devote some attention to India. You can search that book online for the word India. Also try the word Indostan, I-N-D-O-S-T-A-N, and also East India Company. Smith is looking at India in terms of a broader framework across many nations, and he's asking the question, why does the Indian economy appear to be stagnating? And he offers a number of explanations, including parasitic landowners, lack of labor monopoly, and the East India monopoly over trade with India. Smith wanted to open up the Indian trade to free competition. You can usefully search the Wealth of Nations using the keyword East Indies. Also see our video on Wealth of Nations, Book 4. This is Book 4, Chapter 7. And Part 3, which is a discussion on America and the East Indies. Thomas Malthus also makes a contribution to the question of why India was stagnating. As you might expect, Malthus in part considers the issue of population and whether there are sufficient checks on population in India. But Malthus also makes a more subtle point. He turns to the Ricardian theory of rent and the notion that rent is a surplus, which can be too high, and what Malthus does is apply this theory of rent to the Indian economy and argue it's a big reason for India's problems. James Mill, the classical economist and Ricardian, is an important figure in understanding how classical economics approached India. He wrote a 6-volume set, History of British India, the first 3 volumes of which came out in 1818. This was a very comprehensive look at Indian history, although note that Mill did not, in fact, go to India to do the work for these books. Mill really goes out of his way to blame what he called Hindu culture for India's backwardness, and by modern standards, many of these passages in the book would be considered offensive. Overall, what Mill favored was English settlement of India and the notion that India should have more English bureaucrats and English rulers from England as much as possible. He saw this as the best chance of turning around an entire culture of administration. For James Mill, what India needed basically was more of the British, and he himself later became an administrator working on India. John Ramsay McCulloch, another Ricardian economist, offered quite a trenchant critique of policy toward India. He very much opposed the monopoly of the East India Company, and in general he opposed commercial monopolies, including the salt monopoly in India. For India, he wanted free trade and also capital inflow to help develop the economy. He also favored lower land taxes, and he had a decent understanding of how high land taxes at the time were hurting the Indian economy. What's so refreshing about McCulloch on India is simply he realized how messed up the situation really was, and he had some good remedies in mind. Note, however, that McCulloch's main writings on India, they're frequently in the Edinburgh Review, a well-known periodical of the time, but this means they are hard to access. Richard Jones is also an interesting figure in this history. His main work, An Essay on the Distribution of Wealth, is published in 1831, and in general he was an anti-Ricardian economist, and he opposed the application of Ricardian rent theory to India. In general, he thought the Ricardian models were too deductive. He was more institutional. He had a sense of every economy or every region being a bit different. And when it came to India, he saw there was some need to break the cycle of poverty. He was skeptical of a lot of the remedies proposed by the classical economists, and he also considered himself a critic of laissez-faire. In modern terminology, you could say that Jones had a more left-wing position than did McCulloch, but what's refreshing about Jones is, again, simply the sense that he had a pretty good understanding that the situation in India was badly messed up, and that was partly because of policy. Jones's book, by the way, is available through Google Books. Finally, John Stuart Mill on India I consider to be a real puzzle. Mill was one of the most progressive and often insightful economists on many issues, whether it be representative government or women's rights or many other questions. But when it came to India, he seemed quite unimaginative. Partly this may be because he worked for the East India Company itself, and what he wrote on India was quite technical and full of minutiae, and overall Mill did not, in my view, sufficiently challenge the premise of British rule over India. So here we have one of the most wide-ranging and insightful classical economists, but on India, like many of the other classical economists, he was simply a disappointment. I've already indicated some of the major sources and how you might find them, and some of them are actually quite hard to get a hold of. You need very good libraries. There's an excellent overview of all of this in the form of a book. It's by William Barber, and it's called British Economic Thought and India. That's the best place to actually get started.